Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
ECISD Needs Parent Choices on Learning by Ruth Campbell. As plans continue to take shape to start school August 12th, Ector County ISD still needs information on whether families want their students to be educated remotely, face-to-face, or a mixture of both. The deadline for families to make that decision is Sunday, Superintendent Scott Murray said during a media call Thursday. Pre-kindergarten through 8th grade families can choose from face-to-face instruction 5 days a week, a hybrid environment where the student would be at school one day and home the next, etc., and the third would be virtual where the teachers would provide the learning. Our high school families have two options. Option number one for our high school families is a completely virtual option where students are at home 5 days a week. And option number two for our high school families is the hybrid model, one day at school and the next day at home, Murray said. Each family is asked to complete that particular bit of information by Sunday, August 2nd. We need that information so that our teachers and principals can finish up the planning process. About 10,000 families have submitted that information, so we have about 24,000 to go. We've got to have that information for every single child in Ector County ISD. The learning process will be phased in, so only a small number of students will be on campuses. Right now, the health conditions in our community are not as good as they could be, and because of that, we're going to have to significantly limit the number of students that we're serving in those first few weeks of school. Our phased-in process is posted on the ECISD website. I would remind all our families to visit that so you can know what day your child will be able to come to school, if indeed that is a choice you make for your child. We may also, because of the current medical situation in our community, need to make some revisions to that phase-in period, and it may actually have to extend it a little bit longer. But we have an opportunity as a community to make some adjustments, Murray said. He recommends washing hands frequently, social distancing, and wearing a face covering or mask when you leave home. If we take care of ourselves as a community, then more of our students will be able to experience that face-to-face environment within the school setting. And we hope that as many kids as possible will be able to do that as we begin the school year. School registration also is underway through online means, visiting your child's campus or the registration roadshow, which lasts through July 31st. The roadshow was aimed at parents who limited or no internet access at home. This is the first time ECISD has offered the mobile sites. Murray said the mobile sites have attracted some large crowds, so the number of people served has been limited to 50 for social distancing purposes. He said the district has gotten a little bit of feedback from people who are frustrated by having to wait and not being able to sign up. Our campuses are available 5 days a week. We do have staff members on each campus who can answer the phone and staff members who can handle registration, Murray said. He added that this is available 5 days a week. Parents may also access computers at the campuses. If parents are having issues reaching a school, they can call the central office at 456-0000, and Murray said they can get in touch with the campus on your behalf. Asked if he was nervous about starting school, Murray said a lot of time has logged by teachers, principals, central office personnel, and community members planning for August 12th. We do know that there will be bumps along the way. This is brand new for everybody. Transportation is a new process. Feeding our kids is a new process. Educating our kids in the way that we're going to do this is new. Scheduling is new. So there are many new opportunities in this environment. We ask our community for grace as we navigate this new environment, but we also know it's going to be challenging for our parents, Mary said. Many of our moms and dads have to work every day and need their kids to be in school so that they can be at work, he said. ECISD is going to have to balance the health and safety of students with how they are educated and the needs of families and the community. It is a tough balance, but I've been very pleased this summer with the level of engagement of our staff members and parents and kids. All children in 4th through 12th grade will be required to wear a mask all day long, with the exception of lunch and when they're outside at a safe distance. All staff members will wear masks all day long. Students also will have to be screened each day before they come to school, and ECISD employees will have to perform a self-check for symptoms of COVID-19. We have face shields for any of our teachers who wish to add an additional layer of protection to themselves, Mary said. We will encourage hand washing all day long. We have sanitation opportunities available through the wearing of gloves and through ensuring that our custodial staff is keeping areas clean. We will engage our teachers and other employees in that daily cleansing process. We as individuals will have to be reminded on a regular basis that we are responsible for our own space. One of the things that has been added to the curriculum this year is teaching our children some basic hygiene. That is hand washing and mask wearing and all of those elements that will help keep each of us safe. Our teachers from the first day of school will be educating our kids in those safety and hygiene protocols that we all must adhere to. Red Cross in Need of Volunteers by Michael Bauer. Hurricane season is in full session, and it doesn't care about pandemics. That's what makes this hurricane season all the more crucial, according to Tracy Austin, Executive Director of the American Red Cross Permian Basin Chapter. Because of COVID, we are having to change the way we do things, Austin said. Congregate sheltering is what you're used to seeing, but right now it's not ideal. Because of that, Austin says the American Red Cross is working with hotels, campsites, and colleges to use dorms to make sure that people are safe. But one thing they also need is volunteers. She added that it's a different process than what they are used to as they look for people to train and become Red Cross volunteers. Those volunteers can help with staff shelter reception, registration, feeding, information collection, and other vital tasks to help those they serve. Our region is 83 counties, and we are tasked with recruiting 400 shelter workers and 300 health services team members, because each shelter, whether it's a hotel or a dorm or a congregate shelter, will have to have health services team members. So someone who can identify COVID-19, who can create space that is appropriate if someone does have COVID, and someone who has that knowledge who can help drive that effort. The American Red Cross is asking everyone statewide who can train with them to get ready for hurricane season. There are virtual opportunities for people to help, according to Austin. We do have some virtual opportunities for people to deploy, she said. There are ways to do that virtually. We really still need people on the ground to greet people, to register them, to make sure that all of their medical needs are taken care of. That's what we're looking for. Hurricane Hanna recently made landfall across the southern Gulf Coast in Texas, and Austin knows there will be more storms. We're looking for people who want to volunteer, who want to help the people during this hurricane season, Austin said. It's not an if, but a when, and we don't know where a hurricane will hit, but if it hits in Texas, we want to have enough volunteers in the Gulf Coast region. To help train people, Austin said there will be a Hurricane Response Team virtual fair from 4 to 5 p.m. August 3rd from the American Red Cross Central and South Texas region. We'll talk about what it's like to deploy virtually and how the American Red Cross responds to disasters like hurricanes and what measures are taken to make sure everyone is safe, Austin said. Interested people can RSVP and learn more by going to www.tinyurl.com/hurricane-response. And those who have questions can email cstr@redcross.org. It's really simple, Austin said. It's about how you can help the American Red Cross and its mission. We're always the people who are there to help. And this is a session where people can listen to how they can help and what they can do and what roles there are to train for. Everything you have to do, you have to train with the Red Cross. And it's important to get those volunteers trained now because hurricane season goes well into October. So we want to get people trained now so that we can call on them to help. Coming to this virtual fair can help people prepare for that. Obituary and death notices for Friday, July 31st. Sarah Ann Moorman. Sarah Ann Moorman, 74, of Bedford, died peacefully in her sleep at T. Boone Pickens Hospice House in Dallas on July 26th. She was born to Joseph D. and Sally R. Duffy, July 12th, 1946, in Marshalltown, Iowa. She married Gary J. Moorman in 1969. She is survived by her brother Daniel Duffy and wife Joanne, three sons, Bruce Autry, wife Andy, Christian Moorman and wife Joelle, and Anthony Moorman, two grandchildren, a sister-in-law, Judy Jamie Frazee, brother-in-law Doug Moorman, and numerous nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her husband of 46 years, her parents, and sisters-in-law Cassandra Price and Janet E. Moorman. A private celebration of her life will take place in Iowa October 10th. Her family would appreciate donations in her name to your favorite charity. Death notices. Fernando Araiza. Fernando Araiza, 68, of Odessa, died Saturday, July 25th in Dallas. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Wayne D. Cave. Wayne D. Cave, 63, of Odessa, died Monday, July 27th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Ivan Nino Ramirez. Ivan Nino Ramirez, 54, of San Marcos, died Wednesday, July 15th in San Diego. A funeral service was held July 31st at the Lighthouse of Hope Church. Burial will be at 10 a.m. August 3rd with Pastor Daniel Lopez officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jonathan D. Smith. Jonathan D. Smith, 32, died Tuesday, July 28th. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Barbara Ann Stanley. Barbara Ann Stanley, 89, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 28th. A graveside service was held Friday, July 31st at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Judith Ann Judy Watts. Judy Watts, 82, of Odessa, died Monday, July 27th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by La Paz Perches Funeral Homes of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 25, 2020. Three members of Troop 19 earn Eagle Scout rank from staff reports. Three members of Boy Scout of America Troop 19 completed their Board of Review Sunday to earn the rank of Eagle Scout. Luke Borland, 17, Adam Borland, 14, and Anthony Cisneros, 13, will be honored at a ceremony planned for August 29. Luke's and Adam's Eagle Scout projects benefited Midland West Side Lions Club, which sponsors the troop. Luke restored the flagpoles at the club and built brick flower beds around each flagpole. Anthony remodeled the club's restrooms. For his project, Adam built a bird viewing station at the I-20 Nature Preserve. Luke and Adam are the sons of J.R. and Amanda Borland. They attend Texas Leadership Charter Academy. Luke will be a senior, Adam will be a freshman. Anthony is the son of Odessans Basilio and Pam Flores. He will be an eighth grader at Bonham Middle School in Odessa. Source, Boy Scout Troop 19. BSA Troop 19 members Anthony Cisneros from left, Luke Borland, and Adam Borland have earned their Eagle Scout rank. Lonesome Dove Exhibit. Story and photos by J.C. Lewis. Reporter Telegram, jc.lewis@hearstnp.com. The Museum of the Southwest is now showing the Lonesome Dove exhibit for private household visits. The novel, Lonesome Dove, by Larry McMurtry, which chronicles the travels of two aging Texas Rangers driving a herd of stolen cattle 2,500 miles from the Rio Grande to Montana, where they found the first ranch in the state, captured the public imagination, according to the museum's website. The Lonesome Dove miniseries that first aired on CBS in 1989 brought in an even wider audience. The Lonesome Dove exhibition presents 55 framed classic images that Bill Whitliff took during filming of the miniseries. The museum has had 14 households schedule visits in the last 2 weeks, with four visits Wednesday. Executive Director Daniel Eck said, "People can reserve an hour time slot. Staff disinfect for 30 minutes between visits. All visitors over the age of 2 must wear a mask. Tickets are free for museum members and $15 per household for non-members. Midland County Public Library cardholders can also view the exhibit for free through a code given through the library. To reserve a time spot, visit sforce.co/3EXWUAJ. The exhibit will be on display until September 27. The Bradford family, Beth, Ira, Nora, 10, and James, 8, view the Lonesome Dove exhibit Thursday at the Museum of the Southwest. The museum is now showing the exhibit for private visits. Even cowboys mask up. James Bradford, 8, looks at a cowboy hat at the Lonesome Dove exhibit Thursday at the Museum of the Southwest. The museum is now showing the exhibit for private household visits.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 26th, 2020. Foreclosure Rescue Scams by Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin, www.bbb.org. It's no secret that many consumers are struggling financially during these trying times. Unfortunately, some are at risk of losing their homes. In an already stressful situation, scammers are targeting vulnerable homeowners. There are a few versions of foreclosure rescue scams. In one, the scammer offers to buy the property by paying off the overdue amount on the loan, then convinces the homeowner to transfer the deed to a third-party owner. The homeowner is then offered the opportunity to rent the house and eventually buy it back. But the new rent is higher than the homeowner can afford, and they are evicted. Another version includes the scammer reaching out via phone call, text, or email, claiming they can lower mortgage payments to help the homeowner avoid foreclosure. They ask for payment for their services, and once they have the money, they disappear without delivering on the promised outcome. If you're worried about your mortgage or facing foreclosure, consider these tips from your Better Business Bureau. Talk to your lender. You can reach out to your lender to restructure your loan payment or refinance. Scammers running a foreclosure rescue scam may offer to negotiate with a lender on your behalf for a significant fee. If you're uneasy talking to the lender yourself, ask a trusted friend or relative to assist you. Do your own paperwork. Never allow anyone to complete paperwork for you, and read contracts closely before signing anything. Victims of this scam signed quitclaim deeds, thinking they were signing documents to secure a new mortgage. Watch for red flags. Be wary of rescuers that approach you through mail, phone, or email. Some scammers may instruct you not to contact your attorney or mortgage company. If the rescuer requests to be paid in gift cards or wire transfer, or pressures you to sign a contract quickly, cut off contact. Check BBB. If you are considering a deal with a company that offers to buy your home, check their business profile on BBB.org to see if they are trustworthy. Search for information. Foreclosure prevention information is available for free at the HOPE hotline. Educating yourself on your options and the correct processes is the best way to avoid falling victim to a scam. You can find more information on scams like this at BBB.org or report a foreclosure rescue scam at BBB.org/scam tracker. Short-term top. By Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Last week, we noted that there was an oversupply of oil and nowhere to store it, compounded by lack of demand via autos, cruise ships, and airliners, so we predicted oil would advance in price. And it did, a smidge, which is better than a decline. Last Friday, WTIC traded under $41. This Thursday, it closed at $41.07, but hit $42.50 earlier this week. The energy ETF XLE has advanced from $34.256 mid-month to $37.72. There is plenty of natural gas as well. That priced bottomed under $1.55 last June. It closed yesterday at $1.84, again better than a decline. Bad news continues for energy services. The XES ETF had to undergo a reverse split. The price got so low. Schlumberger and Halliburton both trade under $20. My proxy stock for Texas Energy Service is Patterson PTEN. It is trading for 27% of its book value. Ouch. Worse, Transocean Rig is trading for 11% of its book value. Clearly, the market does not see a recovery there anytime soon. In our web blog, https://professorelam.typepad.com/markets/, We have noted the outsized performance of the NASD versus the SPX. The NASD is powered by the FANG group, Facebook, Apple, etc. In particular, Tesla stock price has gone totally parabolic since its low under $400 in March. It rocketed all the way to $1,800. At that price, it is worth more than GM, Ford, Chrysler, or Toyota, but it has now dropped $300 in the last 2 weeks, down 16%. That happened just as the headlines appeared that Tesla was about to be listed in the S&P 500. Remember that all parabolic advances reverse and head down with the same ferocity they rose. I don't think the 10-year bull market is done yet. Rather, we are in for a short-term correction the remainder of July. Another high may be seen by the end of August. That idea is reinforced by the action of two other proxy stocks, Cullen/Frost and Valero. In the 300-plus point decline Thursday, both stocks advanced. The Economist. Universities and COVID by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. As the COVID-19 pandemic emerged this spring, college campuses across the United States swiftly sent students home in droves and switched to online distance learning. The quick transition came with hopes and expectations that things would be largely back to normal by the fall. However, such is not the case, and uncertainty is growing as the time to prepare is diminishing. While there is not yet definitive evidence that the pandemic is decreasing enrollment, there are indications that student preferences are shifting. A survey by McKinsey & Company in April indicates that 21% of incoming students had already changed their first choice school since January 2020 due to COVID-19 concerns. The most prevalent reasons for the switch were concerns over the cost of attendance or the location of the school, whether being too far away or in an area with a high threat level. Of the students who changed their first choice, more preferred in-state public schools or those that were within 50 miles of their homes. In addition, about half indicated that they would consider changing their education plans if the fall semester switched to remote learning. Specifically, 15% of the students said they would likely defer a semester, while 45% indicated they would pursue a different school. Furthermore, 83% of students said they would expect a tuition discount if the fall semester consisted primarily or entirely of online learning. Colleges and universities, especially more expensive private institutions, are facing the dual risks of lower enrollment and pressure to adjust tuition, both of which would be harmful to budgets. These shortfalls could grow if foreign student visas are restricted for those enrolled in only online classes, a bad idea that, for the moment at least, appears to have been abandoned. Tuition and fees account for 20.2% of total revenue and investment return at public four-year institutions and 30.4% at private four-year institutions. Colleges and universities have already begun to reduce budgets, eliminate staff and faculty positions, and even cut entire academic departments. The impact will further be felt in the communities that surround campuses and are dependent on the financial stimulus from university faculty, staff, students, and events. On a broader scale, these reductions or delays in graduates and the corresponding probable losses in research funding and activity bring declines in productivity, upward mobility, and a major source of the U.S. global competitive advantage in innovation. Even as they face the potential for lower revenues, universities are investing heavily in technology improvements to enhance online instruction and safety measures, such as air filtration systems. There is much at stake, not only for students, but also for universities, the communities that embrace them, and the U.S. economy and society. Be safe. Gallego Takes Reins at Sol Ross State by Bob Campbell and Ruth Campbell. Alpine. Former longtime state representative and former congressman Pete Pena Gallego has a big job at hand as the new president of Sol Ross State University. But he is confident that with the skills he has developed and his appreciation for the rural school's uniqueness, he will help increase its enrollment and achieve other important goals. Asked if his June 5th appointment followed the pattern set in recent years by Texas Tech, Texas A&M, and the University of Texas, of naming political and military leaders to the top jobs, the 58-year-old Alpine native said, "In my case, I think the local connection was incredibly important. I'm the first president of Sol Ross who is actually a Sol Ross graduate. It was also the fact that I knew not only this community, but also our Rio Grande College campuses in Del Rio, Uvalde, and Eagle Pass. I don't know that it was the background in politics so much as it was the background in the region and a familiarity with the local culture and the university and the challenges it faces." Noting that SRSU, part of the San Marcos-based Texas State University system, has traditionally enrolled 2,000 plus students, but has lately been down to 1,600. Gallego said one priority is to reach 2,000 again. Texas at one point was a rural agricultural state, and it has transitioned into a more urban state over time, which has led to some declining enrollment. It's a phenomenon most other places don't have to deal with, but we're working on it. We've seen that population density is not always a good thing when you're looking for areas to social distance. While we have some challenges, we also have unique advantages. We are in what I'd refer to as a living laboratory. If you're interested in biology or geology, the Trans-Pecos is a phenomenal place to study. And for water issues or the border economy, those are areas where we have a unique perspective. Alpine, population 8,600, is 140 miles southwest of Odessa. Having grown up working in his parents' business, Gallego's Mexican food restaurant, Gallego first got interested in public service when his dad, Pete A., became the first Hispanic elected to the Alpine School Board in 1959. The late KVLF radio owner and ex-state representative Gene Hendries hired him as an announcer, providing further insights into politics, and then Texas House Speaker Pete Laney gave him many key assignments while he represented the 74th District from 1991 to 2013. Gallego's older sister, Imelda, a retired lawyer, and sister Rebecca, a family practice doctor, were also good examples. "Imelda was the first Latina lawyer I ever met," he said. "She graduated from Sol Ross and went off to UT Law School and passed the bar exam. I hadn't known that Mexicans could be doctors or lawyers, so both sisters were groundbreaking for me." Asked if Texas will turn blue or be controlled by the Democratic Party, Gallego said, "Well, the polls certainly indicate that it's a competitive state. Whether you are supportive of President Trump or not, the one thing that I would assume most people agree on is that he has motivated people to participate in our electoral system. So we'll see what happens. November will be a fascinating month. How we accomplish the voting in the middle of a pandemic will be interesting to watch." After earning a bachelor's degree in Alpine, Gallego earned his law degree at the University of Texas in Austin. He and his wife, Marina Maria Elena, also a lawyer, have a 15-year-old son. Gallego's father died in 2010 at age 85. His mother's name is Elena. He served one term as the Democratic 23rd District Congressman from 2013 to 15 and ran unsuccessfully for re-election to Congress in 2016 and for the Texas State Senate in 18. So counting his 11 terms in the Texas House in Austin, he has run for office 14 times. Opened in 2001, SRSU's Activity Center is named for him. There is a lot of Alpine that's special to me, Gallego said. Four generations of my family have been baptized, married, or had their funeral masses at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church, and I have wonderful memories of graduating from Alpine High School. I also have the memory of times where there was more of a struggle when Alpine was segregated, and I remember the challenge of integration and how controversial that was. In those days, the word Latino didn't exist. We were all Mexicans. So my father was the first Mexican elected to the school board, and my mother led the drive for integration. I grew up in campaigns and always wanted to participate as a candidate. The 77-year-old Laney was reached in his native Hale Center north of Lubbock. Having served as the Democratic Speaker from 1993 to 2003, Laney said he gave Gallego a series of big assignments, including 10 years on the Appropriations Committee and its Conference Committee, because he was dedicated to good government. Good government and doing what was right for the people of Texas were always more important to me than somebody's political philosophy, Laney said. I told my members they should represent their districts and not forsake the people who elected them, then do what was good for everybody. Pete did a real good job of representing his district, not being derogatory of other members. There were some whose philosophy meant more than representing their districts. I think the same qualities that made Pete a good House member will make him a good university president. He has all the respect in the world for his board members and faculty, but he won't be bashful about presenting any ideas that he has to them. Gallego said the skills he has acquired over time will make his new job easier. When you're used to pushing the red button or the green button, it makes that decision process much easier, he said. The fact that I have to be out in public and that I have a network of friends and acquaintances in places I am now working in, these are all things that make this job a lot easier, along with the fact that I have a policy background in education. Gallego noted that the Higher Education Committee was one of his assignments as a state representative, working on the budgets of SRSU and other schools. In his June newsletter to faculty and staff members, he talked of how Sol Ross was the 1949 birthplace of the National Intercollegiate Rodeo Association. We've won 9 national rodeo championships, as many as any other school in the country, he said. This year, assuming we have rodeo, both our men's and women's teams are nationally ranked, and we expect that we have a real shot at winning national championships, so we're calling it the Drive to 10. We respect our heritage and culture, and we're trying to build on them as we move through the 21st century. A spokeswoman for the NIRA in Walla Walla, Washington, said SRSU is tied with Montana State, Southeastern Oklahoma State, and Sam Houston State for the most men's and women's championships with 9, but that it and Montana State have the most men's championships with 7 each. Referring to the Rio Grande colleges, Gallego said, I want to add enrollment not only in Alpine, but also in Del Rio, Eagle Pass, and Uvalde. The key word for me is opportunity. Many of our students are first-generation college students, and one advantage is that we're small. We know our students know us. Gallego respects those who decide against higher education, but said most adults know a college degree is a safety net against the unpredictability, for example, of the oil field. On the parent level, they understand that, he said. On the kid level, I think you see broad understanding of it. I have a vested interest in the university's success, as every day I look at that degree on my wall. I want to make it more and more valuable, not only for me, but for every single graduate of Sol Ross. I love this place because it gave me that opportunity. Our country is a big mosaic with a lot of independent and different pieces. But when you put them together, they make a beautiful mosaic. That's what I want to make Sol Ross into, an institution that reflects not only the community we are located in, but the world that surrounds us.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, July 27th. Campaign kickoff, United Way feels strain of pandemic. The story was written by Tony Venegas. United Way of Odessa Executive Director Hank Herrick said that he's never seen the demand for the organization be any higher than it has the past 6 months. The effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, along with the drop in the price of oil, have put a strain on the nonprofit sector as more people reach out for help. Herrick and the rest of the United Way of Odessa are set to launch its annual fundraising campaign August 7th with a drive-in event at Connection Christian Church. Last year, the organization exceeded its $1.8 million goal, and Herrick says the hope is to break that mark again in 2020 with a greater sense of urgency. Quote, "It's not a matter of can you do this, it's something you've got to do," Herrick said. Quote, "We've got to raise the money to help sustain the missions. We're going to use whatever means possible to help us raise the money this year," end quote. Herrick said the United Way continues to distribute more than $90,000 a month to the 22 partner agencies it works with. And with several organizations not being able to put on fundraisers of their own, having the help of the United Way was something that was paramount to keeping things running. Quote, "They need something to help them through this tough period," Herrick said. "You've got the perfect storm, and our partner agencies were unable to do their spring fundraisers because we were all on the lockdown. It was United Way who kept the spigot on, so to speak," end quote. One agency that benefited from the help of the United Way was Meals on Wheels. The organization had to call off its annual Mud Bug fundraiser, and Executive Director Margaret Burton said that it created a financial hole since it's the only fundraiser that it puts on annually. There's also been a greater demand for the program since some are unable to leave their homes due to quarantine or other medical reasons. Quote, "We've had more and more people get on the program this year, and I've been trying to look for more funding resources for these people," Burton said. "United Way has been great to us," end quote. Like Meals on Wheels, other agencies, such as the Permian Basin Mission Center, have also had to change the way they operate. Executive Director Hector Aguilar said the agency can serve anywhere from 45 to 60 people a day within a 3.5-hour time frame. The agency also helps out with rent and utility payments, and Aguilar says the biggest adjustment has been how the Mission Center as a whole interacts with the general public, especially with the recent increase in the amount of people helped. That said, Aguilar credited the United Way for helping to keep things running with their agency. Quote, "We would not be able to extend our services or serve as many people as we do," Aguilar said. "So we're really, really appreciative of the United Way. They do great work and are a beacon of our community. They work closely with us and they support us, not just financially, but keeping us in the loop," end quote. The campaign runs through November, and Herrick admitted that the United Way will have to get creative in order to reach its goal. With in-person campaigning being limited due to the pandemic, Herrick again emphasized the need to do right by the nonprofit agencies it helps support. Quote, "We're going to use Zoom, Facebook, and whatever technology that we have to use in order to raise the money for this year's campaign," Herrick said. "People aren't going to quit reaching out to nonprofits. If we're going to continue to fund these folks, we need to put on a successful campaign, and we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that happens," end quote. Community and Public Health. This is a guest column written by Carol Cates, the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. There is a great deal of talk and action in how much healthcare providers are heroes. I continue to be awed by the people of the Permian Basin and how they support those of us in the healthcare profession during this pandemic. There are just not enough thank yous possible to give the people on the front lines of this pandemic in our community and those who pray for us, say thank you, donate things like food and personal protective equipment to make the lives of the frontline folks a little easier. One group of people, though, that are very much unsung heroes among those of us in healthcare, not just now, but every day, are the public health folks. I firmly believe that healthcare is a calling, but in my opinion, public health is at a whole different level of calling. The folks that do public health are beyond amazing. They do so much with so little, and unfortunately, far too often these people are not thanked at all, they are scorned. I think most of us, when we hear health department, we think about restaurant inspections or immunization clinics. But they are so much more. As we have found, they are often our first line of defense when it comes to alerting us about disease outbreaks like COVID back in late February and early March. But it's not just COVID. In Texas, there are more than 40 other conditions they actively track to minimize disease outbreaks. They watch our water quality. They have input in how we set up parks and schools to maximize healthy behaviors and minimize risks of illness and disease. They have a huge burden that on most days goes largely unnoticed. One of the best things that public health folks do is prevention. A great example of this is the Healthy People Initiative. Every 10 years, public health experts from around the U.S. get together to discuss things that they can concentrate on to make Americans healthier in the next 10 years. Right now, we are still working on the Healthy People 2020 goals, some of which we will likely be working on with the Healthy People 2030 goals currently in development, but the things they do with these prevention initiatives is pretty special. The Healthy People 2020 goals include things like access to health services. If you read my column on a regular basis, you know how much I stress having a relationship with a primary care provider, a physician, a nurse practitioner, or a physician assistant who you go to for regular checkups, not just when you are sick so you get good preventative care. Public health's job in this case is to set up systems where everyone can get to a primary health care provider, no matter their socioeconomic status, race, religion, gender, or any other difference. That is a huge job and a huge challenge, figuring out not only where those things are needed, but getting the people, supplies, and other resources in place to make it a reality. Another thing in the Healthy People 2020 goals that is very near and dear to my heart, healthcare-associated infections. Hospitals have been working very hard at decreasing those for years, and getting public health involved expands the number of experts looking at the problem, which means more opportunity for solving that problem. That is an awesome thing. One that is newly added to the Healthy People 2020 goals is Health-Related Quality of Life, HRQOL. Health is not just a physical thing. Health is also about mental and emotional well-being, and often that mental and emotional well-being can make a big difference on the physical. I think we have all had days where we are physically tired, not from physical work or exercise, but from mental and emotional stress. As a nurse, I have seen more than one person who has become so ill because of the stressors in their life that they require hospitalization. The role of public health in HRQOL is setting up systems and resources so people can find that sense of well-being. That can come in a variety of ways, from education to things like parks and green spaces in communities, so people can get away. If you are interested in learning more about Healthy People 2020, please visit their website at healthypeople.gov. Community and public health people are such amazing folks with a dedication to serving others that is matched by a very few. They are such a huge part of the front lines in the battle we are waging with the COVID-19 pandemic and deserve a great deal of thanks, not just now, but every day. Please add them to your list of heroes in our community.
Hello, this is Michael reading from the Odessa American, Friday, July 31st. Does holding your breath help dizziness upon rising? To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, a recent column discussed dizziness upon rising. My husband suggested to me to breathe and not hold my breath as I stand up. I find that this works very well for me. Answer. Orthostatic hypotension is dizziness upon rising, and it's a common problem, especially in older people and among those taking high blood pressure medicines. I had mentioned adequate salt and water intake and compression stockings, but after reading your letter, I did find a study showing that slow, deep breathing, 6 breaths a minute, improved symptoms of orthostatic hypotension. I am publishing your letter in hopes that simple breathing exercises at no cost and no risk of medicine side effects may help other readers. Words intended to comfort only trigger man's grief. Dear Abby, for Friday, July 31st. Dear Abby, my wife died unexpectedly 2 years ago after 18 years of a happy marriage and 2 kids. While we are doing as well as can be expected, one thing seems to set my grief off. It's when someone refers to my life as my new normal. I'm not sure I can put my finger on why this phrase bothers me so much, but if I had to guess, it's because I suspect people are using it to hint that it's time I moved on. Why is it that people who would be deeply offended if I attempted to tell them what to do with their life seem to think it's acceptable to imply that I have grieved enough? As I look at my life, I know it is forever changed, and it will never be normal again. It will be what it is, but I will have lost forever the love of my life and the mother of my children. Right now, I am trying my best to keep them healthy, working to keep a roof over their heads, and dealing with my own grief. We are all seeing our own counselors. I have zero time and energy to invest in anything or anyone else. Am I just holding on to the past? Are these people thoughtlessly saying something hurtful, or is it something completely different? Annoyed in Arkansas. Dear Annoyed, people often are at a loss about what to say to someone who has lost a parent, a spouse, or a child. While they may be well-meaning, what comes out of their mouths can be hurtful rather than comforting. Something I have learned from experience, as well as from my readers, is that everyone grieves differently. It's an individual process. Do not assume you know what these people are implying when they make that statement. New normal is a catchphrase that's popular now. It is used to describe conditions as the quarantines are being lifted or reimposed. They may not realize how emotionally loaded that term can be. When it happens again, don't be confrontational, but do tell them how it made you feel. Dear Abby, what's the correct way to break up with someone who lives with you? A friend of mine wants to break up with his girlfriend, who lives in his home along with her adult son and teenage daughter. His concern is she has no place to go. She refuses to work a steady job, so he pays all the bills and supplies her with a vehicle and spending money. She wants desperately to get married. After 2 or 3 years of living with her, he knows he won't marry her. He says she's a nice person, but she's a terrible housekeeper and has no ambition. My friend is a financial planner and works 3 to 4 side jobs, etc. He doesn't have a clue how to end this, but he wants to. How should he dissolve this live-in relationship? Asking for a friend. Dear Asking, your friend needs to summon up the courage to tell this lady he isn't in love with her, doesn't plan to marry her, and he wants her to move. When he gives her the unhappy news, he should also give her a date by which he expects her and her children to be out of there. Advise him that if he's smart, he should first discuss this with an attorney and possibly offer her enough money for a deposit on a place of her or their own. He'll be glad he did.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Sagittarius until 6:58 a.m. when the moon enters Capricorn. Happy birthday for Friday, July 31, 2020. Observant and expressive, you share your knowledge and bring insight to those around you. While you are idealistic at heart, your realism can bring you down this year. You mustn't let it, as you succeed brilliantly. If single, you choose to be alone this year, although you are pursued ardently after the summer. If attached, your partner wants more of you. You sometimes put your work first. Capricorn understands the most. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Your natural self-confidence makes an impression on others. There is a zest for life. With an impulse to explore and expand, you find yourself at the center of attention today. Seek a promotion and make the most of your visibility. Tonight, twirling with delight. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Allow your intuition and inspiration free rein. Some unique realizations can be revealed if you are receptive. Your previously cherished beliefs are shifting and transforming. Today promises a profound spiritual experience. Heed synchronicities and signs. Tonight, write it all down in a journal. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Today, financial prospects brighten. Old beliefs about money are changing. Promote your financial plans. Your guidance ability can also enhance earnings. Also, mysteries are resolved. A lost item might be found unexpectedly. Tonight, reach out to an in-law or child. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Fate plays a role in relationship issues today. A karmic connection is likely. Research can change your plans. Today favors any legal issues you have pending. You will bask in the joyful accomplishments of someone who is near and dear. Tonight, celebration dinner. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Today shows progress in reaching health goals and an awareness of what your body needs to stay in optimum condition. Meditation and visualization build a positive mind-body connection. A beloved animal companion can facilitate improved health and emotional well-being. Tonight, relax. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Share a favorite pastime with one you admire. The expression of creative ideas enriches your life in a serendipitous way. Today also heals an old heartache, evoking sentiment and memories. This can involve contact with someone you knew long ago. Tonight, start a new journal. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. Secrets about relatives, household members, and domestic situations all are important concerns. Vacation plans can be uncertain. Remain flexible. Today focuses on release and forgiveness. Donate items that no longer serve you to charity. Tonight, clear out an old closet. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 4 stars. You will be very busy and multitasking. Today helps you focus and refine details. Others express enthusiasm for your suggestions. Transportation arrangements are successfully resolved. This might involve the purchase of a new vehicle, including a bicycle. Tonight, talk to a neighbor. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Express creative ideas about business. Artistry adds to your income. Friends might suggest lucrative work or offer recommendations that help you financially. Research new earning and investment opportunities. Tonight, hash it all out with your favorite elderly family member. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 5 stars. Ambitious Capricorn ventures forever onward and upward, focused on reaching new heights. Your energy and enthusiasm are at a peak today, as are your charisma and charm. A new hobby, social connections, or creative projects captivate you. Tonight, giddy with joy. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 4 stars. Listen to the small, still voice within you as you meditate. A charm or picture featuring a snowflake reminds you to cherish your individuality, as no snowflake is alike. You will embrace nonconformity. Tonight, conceive a new plan with your iconoclastic nature. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 5 stars. Today brings new and novel ideas, as well as some intriguing and bright acquaintances. It accents your social circle and generates refreshing new goals. Helpful, supportive people offer encouragement. Tonight, catch up with old friends, particularly in other countries or at a far distance. Born today, actress Geraldine Chaplin, 1944, actor Wesley Snipes, 1962, writer J.K. Rowling, 1965.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.